todo el mundo.
But this was really
1981.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Lane Wilson, author of the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series and director of the documentary The Ventures, Stars on Guitars. This is your destination for all things rock, where the interviewees include musicians, authors, historians, filmmakers, and more. And now, on to the show. My guest today is Sally Steele, a true rock historian who lived the scene and has the stories to prove it. One of the many things she's known for is creating the Vegas Rocks Award Show, where she celebrates legends and rising stars alike. Sally is also the director of the documentary Raised on Rock, The Burnett Family Legacy, which explores the impact of one of rock's most influential families. Get ready to hear from someone who was really there in the heart of rock and roll history. Hi, Sally. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on today, Stacey.
Well, I'm so excited to talk to you because you have such a long and rich history in the world of rock, and you've met so many rock legends over the years. I'm sure you probably even lost count, but do you have any kind of standout memories or wild encounters that come to mind?
Well, in 1981, I came from Japan because I was singing in my band over there, and I finally came to Hollywood in 1981. So I lived in Hollywood from 81 to 92. So everything was automatically crazy back then, and you know, singing in bands and just basically doing everything. I mean, which is Rock and Roll None, True Tales of a Hollywood Host, kind of, you know, explained a lot of the crazy memories. I mean, I could just open the book and, you know, pull out a chapter. But, you know, everything was so much different back then. And, you know, it's hard to explain, you know, just everything. Let me just think of a story real quick. But, you know, from the book that I wrote was actually when I started Vegas Rocks magazine in 2004 here in Vegas. People would pick up the magazine, they would go to a page called Hollywood Memory, and they go, that's the first thing I look at, you know. Go, I just love all those stories in the 80s and everything. And I'm like, oh, and then I wrote the book, and you know, I don't think it's for sale anymore because I just didn't print any more copies, and I'm just busy right now working a television series from the book, which, you know, it's crazy. I mean, and then I started Vegas Rocks Magazine, like I said, and that led to the Vegas Rocks Magazine Awards in 2010. And that was back when nobody was really recognizing a lot of the great 80s rock stars that, you know, meant so much to me, you know. And yeah, what kind of stuck in the 80s, so, you know.
Yeah, but, well, definitely it's seen a resurgence, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when I started the magazine in 2004, it's like, you know, is anybody really into Motley Crue like I am still? And, you know, and it was, you know, extremely popular. And, you know, we distributed out to California too. And it was all over town, in town, and all the venues and everything. But, when I first came to Vegas in 2000, I was a limo driver, and I wanted to drive. I saw on the screen it said Alice Cooper, and I'm like, oh, I want to go drive Alice Cooper. And he's like, well, Sally, you're done. It's your shift is over. I go, well, let me get a car. Let me go down there. So it came in, and the guy threw me the keys, and I went up there, and I picked up Alice Cooper, and it's on my Wikipedia page too. It's just so nice. I was all nervous, and I basically turned around and acting like I was driving 100 miles an hour, looking in the back seat with him and Shep Gordon, his manager. And I'm asking all these questions. Where were you when you wrote Generation Landslide? And he's answering, he's so nice, answering all these questions. And, shortly after that, a turn of events, I just started the magazine. And it was just basically, I decided to do it from that meeting with Alice. It's like, well, I asked all these questions. I gotta get these, in a magazine or something, So, but I had no experience with the magazine. I dated a guy. Long story. I don't want to go into it. I got too many stories. I'm sorry, and I'm trying to muddle through them all. He said, well, I'm going to start a local magazine. Oh, that's great. I just thought Alice Cooper. I put that in there. He goes, no, we're just going to do about local bands and stuff. I go, well, nobody's picked that up. Let's get some celebrities in there. I've been taking pictures of rock stars since I was 14. Needless to say, the guy was a drunk. We were engaged. He left me at the altar, so to speak. And was, just traumatized because I would have been so good at that. And then my daughter says, well, screw him, start your own magazine. I'm like, oh, okay. And I didn't know what I was doing. I went to Kinko's and like, how do I start a magazine? He's like, well, you got to get a graphic artist. I'm like, what's that? He's like, and I go, well, how do you fill it in? And like, well, you have to write it. I go, I do. I got to type a magazine out. Because yeah, hire somebody. So the Vans Warped Tour, and I started Vegas Rocks magazine. So I'm kind of starting there, and then crazy stories from, starting a magazine, and it was, went from a newspaper and went to, full gloss. Then, that I did the awards, and, there are just so many crazy stories as I can tell you some of those. But, basically Hollywood was Hollywood back in the 80s,
I want to know, like, how did you become a musician and what made you decide, oh, yeah, I can start a magazine. I can do an award show. I can direct a film. I mean, I think that's such an admirable trait.
Yeah, well, I always tell everybody I'm on the Earn program because yeah, I have a history of doing it. It's like I gotta do a magazine. Let me do it. And yeah, I just started as I went, and all the corporate Vegas Weekly, they were all laughing, and oh, this chick will be gone in 6 months, and I was in print for 16 years. It, every month I put the magazine out, and I don't know if I can say this, but the magazine got so popular that the delivery people from Las Vegas Weekly were stealing my magazines and throwing them out because I became their competition. And I'm saying that because I had video of it. And
Oh,
owners
wow.
of the clubs were saying, we don't want your magazine. We want Sally's magazine in here because it was just, just all full color and talking about, I would interview all these rock stars, and but it was, I had no time to breathe. 16 years just constant,
Yeah.
and I stopped it in 2016 because I wanted to, go to another crazy venture. Was yeah, just okay. Well, I can do an entry. Let me go, just like the magazine. I'll buy a camera and a tape recorder, and I'll get started. And the magazine was just, well, let me get the DSLR and the lens, and I'm going to start, this documentary, because I'd always wanted to do a documentary, but I never had the really good story. All excited to do, the one raised on rock, the Burnett family legacy, after I met Rocky Burnett backstage. at the Viva Las Vegas rock show.
Yeah, that's really quite an interesting story that I didn't know much about. I don't know. I don't think there was even another documentary about the Burnett family before you took it on. Did he ask you? Did you ask him? How did that gel?
So I asked him, and he's like, "Oh no, you don't want to do that." And I go, "Well, you have such an amazing history with, your dad, who was Johnny Burnett, who was very famous, died very young. He did You're 16, and he did this song Dreamin' rather. And I found out that none of the members of the family were speaking." And I go, "Well, this is crazy. I mean, you don't speak to, Billy Burnett, who was in Fleetwood Mac for, I think it was 9 years, might have been 13 years, I can't remember." And he says, "No, we don't talk. We aren't on any good terms." And it was interesting because our fathers, Billy and Rocky's fathers, did not get along. And there was a competition there. And I said, "Well," and none of the it's and the two sides of the families, there was always a competition. So I let me bring the two sides of the family together and see what's going to happen. And I didn't know how it was going to turn out, and it did it. But when I started doing the film festivals, everybody came. It's like, "Wow, I know everything about rock and roll." And I didn't know this story because their fathers from the Rock and Roll Trio, Johnny Burnett and Dorsey Burnett, started the Rock and Roll Trio, and that was the first rockabilly band. And they influenced Led Zeppelin, Elvis. Elvis lived in Memphis with them when they were, starting out. And it was, a great story, and I wanted to get it out to the world. And that's what everybody said. "Well, we had no idea about this. Thank you for telling the story." And of course, when I did the movie, it was just chaos because they wouldn't speak to each other. And like I say, Gary Busey was in the film, and it turned out as a very dramatic, serious till Gary Busey, who was friends with Billy Burnett and all the Burnetts, he used to play drums for them. It became like a reality, crazy reality show after he got involved, and
Yes, I love
that's
that part
the
of
end
the
of
film.
the film. Yeah,
Did
it
you
was.
know? I mean, that kind of adds some levity to the story because there are some serious moments in the film as well. And Gary certainly does have a bit of a reputation for being a wild card. I'm wondering if you really knew that going in, or did you find out after you brought him onto the project?
Rocky got mad, and he said he didn't want him in the film because they had had a rift years ago. But and he told me, goes, after I went to his house and interviewed him for the film, then we did the last part of the show, which with the documentary, which was I was going to see if I could actually bring all the family members there. And Gary said he wanted to present Billy Burnett with his award, so he showed up, and Rocky says, "Don't bring him. He'll make all these demands, and he'll drive you crazy." And that's what it was. I spent 3 days with Gary Busey. I went to his house, and he's like, I knocked on the door. He lives in Malibu, and he goes, "Have we met before?" I go, "Well, I worked on a film as an extra a long time ago, and we talked briefly." He's like, "Okay, well, come on in." And so I went in, and just immediately he's like, "Did you know there's aliens under the pyramids? They're buried down in there. Hey, did you?" And he just starts talking. I go, "Get this camera on, because nobody's believing this crazy stuff he's talking about." It's like, "Okay, here's my favorite part on TV of No Business Like Show Business. She's about to sing." And he's just talking so fast. And he did a great, but he ended up doing a great job. And I'm glad that he did. He was available for the movie.
Yes, he really adds a lot to it. It was really entertaining, and I want to repeat that again. Raised on Rock, the Burnett Family Legacy. It's available streaming, so I suggest that everyone listening watch it. You'll definitely learn a lot. And you mentioned now that you were an extra on a Gary Busey film, and that's yet another cool thing that you've done is some acting and appearances in film. So I kind of looked you up on IMDb before this, and I saw that you had a cameo or a small part in Hard Rock Zombies, which it kind of has this unique cult following, and I wanted to know how that role came about and if you remember any funny stories from being on set.
You know, it's impossible to list all the hundreds and hundreds of films and movies that I was in as bit parts, background extra, because they're like, well, we need to see, vouchers or something. Where would I, that's 35 years ago. Where would I find this? And I don't know how they picked up that, because that was like my very first one that I did. They used to have the drama log paper out there, and I just went for an audition, and the director was really impressed, and he like even gave me screen credit at the beginning of the film, although it's under Sally Craig, my maiden name. And it was crazy. I mean, it was a very low budget, I haven't even seen, I can't really tell you much about the film.
It seems
I
to
was
be
just
in
really
German
excited.
or something. I looked at the trailer. I was like, what is this? It kind of looks very different. It's got some hard rock in it, though, which is perfect for you.
I don't even know. I didn't even know there's a trailer. I haven't seen the, I don't think I ever saw the film. You know, I mean, in those days, I thought when I, after I did that, I was like, wow, this is really easy. I can just sit down and, I don't, I'll get up when they tell me to. I can sit here and read the National Enquirer and the ch lawn chair. I really like this job. But then I started doing it like, 3 to 5 days a week, and it was exhausting to stay on the film sets for, just 12 to 16 hours a day. And I was also at the time trying to make it my band, and at night I would be, carried out a straitjacket, and then I'd go on the set and I'd be wiped out, and I'd be, down at Universal or wherever doing a movie as an extra. And so yeah, it was daytime running around being a trying to be a movie star, and nighttime trying to be a rock star,
You talked a little bit about living in Hollywood for quite a while and then moving to Las Vegas. And I want to talk about that segue, what attracted you to Las Vegas, and also just the fact that it has such a vibrant rock scene right now, which you do celebrate with your award show. My favorite local band, Crashing Wayward, got to perform and get an award at the last iteration of the award show. But I want to talk about how you've seen the Las Vegas music scene evolve over the years and what makes it unique compared to other rock hubs like, say, LA.
I only know LA anymore from, well, there's the Whiskey and the Roxy. And I know there's a lot of other places, but with Vegas, it's all concentrated, just so many views, and, right here in one space. You got to drive around and find things in LA. And, what makes it different? I don't know. I know it makes it more competitive because, it doesn't matter. If I have the biggest stars in my award show, I'm still competing. Sting at Caesar's Palace, and there's just so many events going on at the same time. It's really difficult to, get people to even, hey, we're doing this over here, and I tell it to band, they go, oh, we want a residency in Vegas. I'm like, well, everybody, you're get ready to compete with the biggest names in the world. So I think that's what makes it. I mean, all the clubs and everything are all together, and the venues on the strip here in Vegas. But at the same time, if you go to LA, there's just, to me, there's just, okay, the Roxy and the Whiskey and Troubadour and, those places. So I think it's more exciting here in Vegas, to see all the different things going on. And I came to Vegas because after, in when Nirvana took over the strip and my band broke up in 92, I was pregnant, I had my daughter, I moved to Nashville, and that was like very miserable. And I knew somebody in Vegas, and that was kind of the last place to go because I still did my music career in Nashville. but I didn't fit in. I mean, back then in 92, 93 was, the first thing somebody said to me, you're an alien, you're from LA, Los Angeles. It's like, and the hillbilly, he's like, why don't you just get on to where you come from? And it was like that. And
Oh, wow.
I couldn't quite ever fit in. And so I then, I came to Vegas and didn't quite know what I was doing. I just worked as a cocktail waitress at the Stardust, and during the day worked at the Riviera Stardust at night in the showroom. But was wanting to do something again in rock and roll. That's why I started the magazine.
I did watch your YouTube retrospective, My Crazy Life, with your story about Nikki Sixx. I didn't see part two yet, though. Are you working on
Yeah, it's already done. I just haven't had a chance to edit it and put
that? Well, I'm
it
excited
out,
to hear the rest.
and I will I okay I'll tell you that story. And I can be, if you go to my YouTube page, youtube.com/Sally Steele, you'll hear the full story. But the part two is basically, I heard that Motley Crue was auditioning singers. This was, what was these, like 1999, and so I got a hold of their man and says, that's me. I gotta come out to Georgia right now doing a paper route, but I'm gonna come out there and audition. And I sent them all my stuff, my pictures from the 80s. And, I don't like to give away my age, but I'm from the 80s. I was a little bit older. They're looking for young girls, but I was just consumed with Motley Crue again here in 99. And so I took all my money that I had, which was $600, got a plane ticket, flew to LA. I know if I could get in the audition or where it was. And I called up their management, and the secretary answered, and she didn't put me on hold. She says, Sally Steele is here in town for the audition. And he's like, he's here, so he says, okay, well, all right, go ahead, the audition's over there. And I go in there, and Nikki Sixx had his back to me, and he's like telling everybody, okay, he's gonna come in and sing, once the chorus version and all that. And he turns around and he sees me, he goes, hi, I'm Nikki. I go, of course you are, and I got in there to audition, and it was girls, 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 and Dr. Good. And they said, just sing the chorus. I go, oh no, I'm singing the whole song. Come on, let's go, guys. Come on. And so I started singing Girls, 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 and I'm jumping around. And Randy Castillo was the drummer at the time. Tommy Lee wasn't in the band. And I'm jumping around, and Nikki's just looking at me like, we got a live one here. And I finished the song, and I did really good, And Randy Castillo's like, oh, there's your calisthenics. And but then I'm singing Dr. Feelgood, and I put lyrics down because I've heard the song 20 million times, and I couldn't remember all the words, so I had the words. And Nikki's like, well, what's that? What are you doing? I go, I'm reading the words off the CD so I can sing it, because I knew all the girls, girls, girls. And I can't really see the words, so I start making up words. Nikki's just kind of looking at me while I'm singing, like, what the hell? I mean, I'm making up words that he wrote, right? And then, of course, after it was over, I knew it was blown and everything. And I just said, I want the job, Nikki. I want to come out here. And he's just, okay, I want to quit my paper route and come out here. And, I don't even know if he equates me, because I've met him and interviewed him many times over the years, and it was quite an experience. And then I flew back. I was all depressed and everything, but he signed, like, I had like 50 articles for him to sign after the audition, and I felt like, oh, it's worth it. I got all these autographs, So,
So I want to kind of segue to my standard exit question. What is your own personal rock and roll nightmare?
probably, all the things that went wrong behind the scenes at my award shows. I mean, I've just we were live on Access TV in 2012, and the curtain's ready to open up again, and Michael Anthony doesn't have a bass. We're getting ready to go on. Sammy Hagar was there. We're, and it was just things like that. He doesn't have a bass, and I remember I'm looking at the side of the stage and just in sheer panic, and Michael Anthony's just kind of standing there looking at his bass amp, like, and this guy, I remember, I don't remember who it was, but he came. I don't want to say running down the stairs. It was more like flying. And he just, nick of time, curtains opening and gives Michael his piece. So it was a lot of nerve-wracking things over the years with all my award shows. And so I would say award shows, I've done seven of them. I'm going to do another one. All the crazy things that happened with those that, but yeah, I also want to say that, my film, Race on Rock, The Burnett Family Legacy, that's on Amazon and Tubi and YouTube and Google Play. I invite everybody to watch it. It's not the usual kind of documentary, but Mick Fleetwood's in it and a lot of other great stars. And I'm at vegasrocks.com. My YouTube page is, like I said, is youtube.com/Sally. So I've interviewed every rock star there is there. So
I think so,
to get a chance
yes.
to say how your documentary, I love your documentary, Stacey. You had just amazing star power in that. Congrats on doing such a great job with that.
Oh, thank you so much. A couple weeks ago, we had a little discussion about the rock and roll nightmares behind the scenes of making a documentary, too. But the whole thing is being able to pull it off so no one knows what happened behind the scenes, right?
We could do a documentary just on put together and
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Sally, for being here. And you're welcome back anytime when you're ready to do another award show or you have anything to talk about.
okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on, Stacey.
This concludes another episode of the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. Remember, there's a book series too. All the books are available in paperback, ebook, and audio via Amazon or the Rock and Roll Nightmares website. That's ROCK-N-ROLL-Nightmares.com. Our official theme song is She's Out for Blood by Fuzzbuster, founded by Lars Cabot. Thank you for listening.
Where she's by.